guys. Welcome to the 9th episode of Sustainable Life. I'm your host, Will Shepherd, and today on the show, we have an awesome program for you. So we actually are bringing on Tim Nash, who is a certified financial planner, and he runs a investing firm called Good Investing. And basically what they do is they help all sorts of people just invest their money in companies where their values actually align with what the company's trying to do. And so we had a super awesome discussion today about how your investments can actually make a difference in the real world. And so obviously it's a little bit weird sometimes when you're purchasing a stock because it's not necessarily tangible, but in essence, you are buying a piece of a company. And so we go over that and we go over a bunch of awesome resources that you can actually use to educate yourself, like Reddit and just awesome books that are available for everyone out there, really. And so I won't get too much into it before we actually hop in the show, but here he is, everyone, Tim Nash. Hey, Tim. Well, thanks for hopping on. I really appreciate you coming on the show. So first, before we get started, do you mind just kind of introducing yourself?
Sure. So thanks so much for having me on. So my name is Tim Nash. I'm basically a financial planner, and I teach people how to invest their own money according to their values. So it's been quite a journey to sort of find myself as both a financial planner and, you know, and really just focused on this niche of sustainable investing. That my background is that I studied economics and philosophy in university, and the philosopher in me was always sort of questioning our economic models, these things I was being taught. And then in my third year, I did an exchange to New Zealand, where I took a course in something called triple bottom line economics. This idea, instead of the single bottom line of just profit, this idea of people, planet, and profit. This was probably back in like 2004, 2005, something like that. So this term, you know, hadn't really made its way over to North America. I certainly hadn't heard it before. And light bulbs just really started going off in my head about, you know, sort of the problems in our economic system, that it was basically ignoring the social and environmental problems. So I came back to my fourth year economics program full of questions. My professors did not have answers. So I went to Sweden and I did my master's in sustainability. This really cool program, a school called the Blekinge Institute of Technology. And it was this great one-year master's programs where I learned all about sustainability and systems thinking and engineering for a sustainable society. And that's where I did my thesis on responsible investment. When I started my research, you know, everyone assumed that financial returns were going to be lower, that to sort of do the right thing, to be sustainable, that you had to sacrifice financial returns. And I found that just not to be the case at all. And this was back in, you know, 2007, 2008, so 13 years ago. What we found was that actually the social and environmental issues were quite, the term we used is financially material, that they actually had an impact on a company's profits and expected returns, and that actually investors could choose better companies by examining these social and environmental issues in addition to the financial information. So it was really cool. I did this great thesis. I graduated in July of 2008, kind of ready to take the world by storm. Came back to Canada, you know, looking for a job in the investment industry. And 2 months later, the stock market crashed. And it really was, you know, I was kind of shit out of luck. There were just no jobs available at all. At that time, sustainability really got thrown on the back burner, which sucked. At least now it's been really interesting with COVID right now that in this crisis, you know, sustainability has actually stayed on the front burner, that issues like climate change and inequality are like actually even more important, you know, and in this economic crisis. So, you know, it's been really interesting, but back then there really were no jobs available. So that's when I started my own business. And, you know, I've just been on a journey sort of ever since with several different iterations. And, you know, what I found is that people just need help, that a lot of people want to invest according to their values, but they have no idea what options exist, how to start, what it means. Like, we're really just not taught this stuff. in school, basic financial stuff, let alone as it relates to sustainability. So, you know, really, it's been cool. A couple of years ago, I kind of quit all my side hustles and went full on with my business, Good Investing. And so now I spend my days helping people how to figure out how to invest their own money online according to their values.
Yeah, that's super cool, Tim. And it's awesome to see like kind of your development in terms of like coming from a college classroom, which a lot of our audience might be in now, and how it's kind of like changed your perspective and view on how our systems actually work. And then that developing into kind of actually seeing results in your research, and then finally becoming a business owner and helping others to kind of do the same thing that you may have been doing. And I definitely relate to the fact that most people, right, like they don't really understand the potential for investments that they have, or even how to invest in general. I mean, for the most part, people are kind of shit at saving, right? So it's one of those things. I think it's an awesome topic, and I think it's super important, especially because that investment money actually can make a difference. And so with the question there, what would be kind of, I guess, your advice to maybe a younger person on how to invest properly for the future?
Yeah. So, okay. So that's a big question, because I could go and let me bite off a little bit of it. And by all means, stop me and feel free to direct me, you know, sort of if there are things you want to go deeper on, I'm always happy to. But I do want to start by acknowledging that, you know, even talking about investing comes with a pretty high degree of privilege, right? That basically before someone is ready to invest, I assume first and foremost that they actually have more money, that they're earning more money than they're spending. Right. So like the first thing is like budgeting and, you know, getting your expenses low and have a job where you can make more money than you're spending on a given month. And then from there, people really should have an emergency fund. And, you know, pre-COVID, we would talk about like 3 months to 6 months expenses. Now that things are obviously a lot more precarious, you know, depending on your situation, but it's often like, you know, 6 months to 12 months, the almost like a full year's expenses should be like in cash in, you know, a high interest savings account or something that's really, really, you know, safe and liquid, such that if you lose your job or like shit happens, that, you know, really that you want to have that safety net in place before you're ready to start taking risk with your investments. And then from there, you know, really it was frustrating for me. What really started my journey was in about 2012 on the investment side. Originally before that, I was trying to work my business model as I wanted to go after the big institutions. So like foundations and pensions and university endowments, which, you know, I'm hoping we might be able to chat a little bit about. But like at that time in 2012, you know, really they weren't ready. That I was too ahead of my time, that, you know, it was just, they just weren't there. So, you know, I really struggled with my first business model. And it wasn't until I got an early inheritance from my grandpa, had about $7,000 or $8,000 that I wanted to invest and, you know, really had to figure out how do I do this myself. So, you know, I went on a journey and I just started reading everything I could. And, you know, there are a lot of amazing books out there that I'm happy to sort of point people towards. There's also, you know, subreddits. Like, you know, for me, there's something called Personal Finance Canada, or there's a Facebook group called Choose FI, like Financial Independence, you know, where it's other people going through this as well. And it was just really cool, like reading about this stuff and understanding that there was this whole world of investing. And really, you know, I think the starting point, what people really need to understand is this idea of exponential growth, of compounding returns. And it's amazing how few people really understand how, you know, compounding works. And we're seeing this a lot with the COVID data, that I think that this idea of exponential growth really took people by surprise, that, you know, this thing could spread so quickly. But, you know, that's how it works. And when it comes with investing, it's a little bit slower. It is more, you know, sort of year to year, decade to decade. But over years, you know, if you're able to earn compounding financial returns, you know, it's really remarkable how quickly your money can grow. It takes patience, but then you kind of hit this inflection point, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, okay, you know, I'm really starting to see that net worth grow. So, you know, really the starting point is going to be, you know, just to get your house sorted out, you know, your budget, your savings, your emergency fund. From there, it really is going to be about like opening a brokerage account. So there are a bunch of different options. You know, Robinhood, I think, is probably the most popular right now, you know, in terms of the smartphone app. From there, it is about developing what we call an investment plan, which really comes down to a pie chart. And, you know, the pie chart, you want it to be diversified. You want to kind of spread it around. And that, you know, likely there's going to be a mix of both stocks and bonds in there. Although for a younger audience, there is, you know, probably going to have a lot more stocks than bonds. And then, you know, the way I break it up is into what I call doing less evil versus doing more good. That I think most of your portfolio, what I would suggest from a sustainability perspective is you still want like a broad market, like, you know, these global multi-billion-dollar companies in there and, you know, really kind of spread it around. And then that allows you to carve out part of your portfolio for what I call doing more good, which is actually carving out for things like renewable energy, clean technologies, you know, things that are really good. And obviously the doing less evil, you know, we want that broad market, but get rid of things like tobacco or weapons or fossil fuels, or like everyone's going to be different there, right? But it's still this, you know, sort of these, what we would call expected market returns. And then, you know, with part of your portfolio, you don't want to go all in, but that's where you can look at investing in things that, you know, are potentially a little bit sexier, and things like renewable energy, or, you know, Tesla has just had such a remarkable year. And, you know, my investors might have missed the boat. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, how much that company is going to be worth in the future, but certainly, you know, I wouldn't want someone to put all of their money into Tesla. It's a very, very risky stock. But, you know, if you do have your bases covered with a nice diversified portfolio, then certainly you could carve out part of your portfolio for something like that.
Yeah, cool. And I think it's awesome that you bring up reading and, well, Reddit, I guess, too. I know for me personally, one of the books that really kind of allowed me to shift my perspective was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and kind of the view of money. And then also, you know, yeah, you mentioned subreddits and things along those lines. And there's the FIRE Reddit that I'm in. So that's financial independence, retire early, for any of the listeners that don't know. And there's a lot of like very intelligent people in these Reddits that offer free advice. And it can be a great tool to really tap into. And then so when you're talking about kind of these more sustainable type investments, so you kind of have, you said like an anchor for your like S&P 500 type, and then you then choose more sustainable investments. Does that typically, is that coming with more risk and less returns, or what is kind of, what typically happens with those sustainable investments versus an S&P 500?
So let me use the S&P 500 as a benchmark, because that's a really nice focus for me. And that's, you know, something that I would say any of those subreddits would be very happy with people buying an ETF, an exchange traded fund that is linked or that tracks the S&P 500, which is an index of the 500 largest companies in the US market. So, you know, from there, I would suggest looking at what I would call the doing less evil options, which are really going to be very similar to that S&P 500, right? That most of the top holdings are all going to be the same. However, it's going to get rid of things that people don't want. And there's such a wide range of spectrum here that, you know, for example, there's an ETF from a company called Vanguard. Vanguard is very popular, one of the most popular, and usually one of the cheapest ETFs, that the fees are very low. So they have this ETF that is like the US stock ETF that is socially responsible, that is uses this, the acronym we use is ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance. So, you know, if you see ESG, that's kind of like an acronym, or like I would translate that very easily as a sort of sustainability. And I'm happy to get into like what that means. And there are these different research companies that do ESG analysis, but I do think that's a little sort of deep down the rabbit hole. So, you know, really what you're going to want to do is start with something like this Vanguard. I believe the ticker symbol is, what is it? ESGV, I think. I'm just going to bring it up here on my computer. So yeah, ESGV. And this is what's known as the Vanguard ESG US Stock ETF. And so this is going to be really similar to that S&P 500 benchmark. The performance is going to be almost identical. The companies are going to be almost identical, except that this one gets rid of the quote unquote sin stocks. So alcohol, tobacco, weapons, and this one does get rid of fossil fuel reserves as well. So basically it's going to be like, you know, very same, similar list. You're just going to get rid of Exxon. And you're going to get rid of Philip Morris, that's tobacco. And you're going to get rid of Lockheed Martin, which is weapons. And that this is done just as well. It's actually done a little bit better than that standard S&P 500 benchmark. Now, that would be like a small step in the right direction. And then from there, you could go like all the way down, you know, there's a whole range of options. And at the most sustainable, I would look at, you know, options like there's one vegan. I think it's V-E-G-N is the ticker symbol there. And, you know, this one is basically, again, very much tries to copy that S&P 500. This is called the U.S. Vegan Climate ETF. So, you know, would be fossil fuel free and, you know, low carbon, as well as getting rid of companies that are produce meat, or I think as well, I'd have to double check it. I think animal testing as well is part of their methodology. So really it's like, you know, you take the universe, which in this case is the S&P 500, and what you're doing is you're cutting out the things that you want to get rid of. Now, obviously there are trade-offs involved. It happily, performance hasn't been one of them. Now, a lot of these ETFs have only been around for 2 or 3 years, so my sample size is quite small, and I don't want to promise that they're going to continue to outperform now and forever, because, you know, I don't have that crystal ball. But what I would expect them to do is to track very closely the returns of a standard S&P 500 index. That there's going to be a high degree of correlation there, right? That if the US market goes up, they're all going to go up. If the US market falls, they're all going to fall. And that, you know, what you're doing here is essentially getting those, I would say, market rates of return. And that each one is going to be different. The closer it is to the benchmark, then the closer you're going to get to the expected risk and return. Whereas the more sustainable you go, the more you're going to deviate from that benchmark. You know, that's when there is going to be those deviations, and it might be a little higher risk. The returns might be higher or lower in a given period, right? But really it's up to people to kind of decide, you know, how far down that rabbit hole they want to go, where they are on that spectrum, and to choose ETFs that most closely align with their values.
Yeah, sure. I think it's the alignment of values, I think, is super cool. So say you're a vegan, you don't believe in hurting animals and things along those lines, that's an option for you. But also if you're just one who wants to focus on sustainability with maybe less risk, that's also an option. And I think that's a really great thing, right? But also something that maybe not many people think about. I know personally, like until a few months ago, right, I haven't really thought about like where my actual investments are going.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I've been dealing with my entire career, right? Is that people just don't think about it. It's just not something they've thought of. That, you know, I used to joke that people spend more time choosing an avocado in the grocery store than they spend choosing investments for their retirement.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think it's hard to conceptualize what a stock is, right? But it's actually part of a company. And so with that, so say everyone were to invest in more sustainable investments, what do you think would be kind of the real world application, or how would you see that effect in the real world?
Absolutely. So, okay. So it's really tricky, because one thing you got to understand about the stock market is that when we're buying or selling in a stock, we're not buying or selling it from that company. You know, if I buy a share of Apple, I'm not giving Apple my money. Instead, I'm buying that share from another investor. So this is what's known as the secondary market, is what we're in. That said, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard the expression, the invisible hand before. But this is like Adam Smith. This is like throwback way back when, you know, when the pioneers of capitalism talked about the impact that a bunch of small little decisions can make. That, you know, if everyone chooses to, you know, let's say buy oat milk, put oat milk in their coffee instead of cow's milk, right? That me choosing to make that decision, my one little purchase, that's not going to do everything. But if everyone chooses to do that, That's going to have a massive impact, both by increasing the demand for oat milk and then also lowering the demand for cow's milk. And in the same way, when I'm looking at my little piddly little investment portfolio, you know, I'm not going to move markets with the amount of money that I have right now. But if everyone starts to do this, then you better believe markets are going to move. And we've already started to see it happen. And so what we're seeing happen is basically two big things are changing right now. The first one relates to something called a company's cost of capital, which is a really weird sort of economic term. But this is the idea that if they need to raise money, they're going to have to pay for that money. And either by through their shares, you know, they can issue more stock and dilute shareholders. And, you know, in which case you are buying those additional shares directly from that company, they get it. Or through bonds, which is the company lending money. Investors lending money to those companies. So, you know, really what we're seeing is, and specifically with fossil fuel and fossil fuel divestment, because so few investors are now willing to invest in fossil fuels, what we've seen is that the cost of capital for fossil fuel companies has gone up quite dramatically, meaning that it's more expensive for them to raise money, which means that these projects are not as profitable. They've got like worse break-even points, which means that there likely aren't going to be as many projects going through. And on the flip side, you know, Tesla's a great example of this, where their stock has done so well that it's been very easy and cheap for Tesla to issue more shares and to raise money, such that Tesla, you know, I remember maybe 5 years ago, and you know, there are all these fears about Tesla was going to run out of money, that it was hard for them to raise capital. Well, that is not the case right now. That, you know, it's made it easier and cheaper for these green energy projects and these, you know, sustainable companies to be able to raise money. Now, you know, it's tricky because what that means from an investor standpoint, though, is that I can make more money from fossil fuels and I might not make as much money from renewable energy investments, you know, and so long term, there might be that gap in terms of performance. That said, you know, really, I think what's changed is the risk profile. That now I think investors really understand that those fossil fuel projects are very risky. That, you know, all these climate lawsuits and, you know, if there's a price on carbon and, you know, I don't want to jinx anything for us, but, you know, there's an election coming up. And if all of a sudden, you know, we got a change in government and we had a Green New Deal or, you know, these environmental policies, then, oh my goodness, those fossil fuel projects are at a huge financial risk. So, you know, it's really interesting to see how that has shifted. But that's like the first way that we have an impact with our investments is that by increasing demand or lowering demand, what we're doing is raising the cost of capital or lowering the cost of capital for those companies. And then as well, what we're seeing is that there's also now a bit of a race where these companies are like competing with each other to be more sustainable, to get inside of those funds to get that capital, which obviously is, you know, has a huge impact. You know, if we have companies not, you know, competing with each other to lower their carbon footprints or to treat their employees better, or, you know, that would just be so positive for society. The second impact that we can have is through this really funny mechanism called shareholder engagement. So basically, when you buy shares in a company, you are an investor in that company, you own a part of that company, you get to vote at their annual general meetings, their AGM, for, you know, their board of directors and different motions. And so what we're seeing, and this is, you know, it wasn't as popular, but now I'm really starting to see movement here, where a lot of these fund companies are now, you know, investors are looking, well, how are you voting our shares? And that, you know, and I don't expect people to like show up at a company's AGM and actually vote. Although I did have one client, he loved it. He was like, company was headquartered in his hometown. He was like, I went to the AGM. It was really cool. I was like, it wasn't boring. He was like, no. I was like, okay. But instead, what we do is when we buy these funds, that they have these things called proxy voting guidelines, which are guidelines for how they're going to vote your shares. And that, again, by choosing a more a sustainable or socially responsible fund, that, you know, they're much more likely to be voting for things like gender diversity on the board of directors, or things like climate change resolutions, or, you know, all those wonderful motions. And that, you know, the firms that are really ahead of the game, that are really trying to push it forward, they're actually engaging those companies in dialogue. And before the vote, to say, hey, we're going to put this vote on, but, you know, do you really want us to vote on it? Why don't you just adopt it ahead of time and save everybody that trouble? So, you know, it's been really interesting to see, but like really the change theory is twofold, that, you know, on the one hand, it is the market dynamics and the market move and the invisible hand and the whole sort of pricing of assets within our system. And if we can start to incorporate sustainability into that asset pricing, that's going to have a huge impact. And then the second is, you know, through this idea of shareholder voting, that basically we have the power to be able to push companies in a more sustainable direction.
That is awesome. Yeah. And I think you raise a good point, though, too, with like kind of the risk factor of fossil fuels versus renewable energy and stuff like that right now. Because if you think about it, I think it's much more likely that legislation is going to get passed that will hinder fossil fuels versus something that will hinder renewable energy. I mean, maybe I'm wrong in saying that, but I think that might be the case. And also, I mean, renewable energy projects typically aren't, you know, $5 billion projects. It can be scalable. It can be a solar array that, you know, you put as much as you want into it. You don't need to build a massive natural gas plant just to produce power. So I think it's definitely interesting to see kind of like the market effects and how everything works interchangeably.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really just important for people to start asking questions. You know, that really is the biggest thing, that, you know, when I started doing this, you know, 12 years ago, whatever, people thought I was nuts. Nobody knew this concept of sustainable investing. And I think that now it's just people are figuring it out, that this is such a lever for change. But it's also something that's really important for people's own personal, like, financial future, right? Like this idea of financial independence and freedom and having the ability to, like, you know, start your own business or go back to school or like fuck off for a year or two and just, you know, get some new experiences under your belt, that, you know, money does provide a lot of that freedom. And so, you know, to me, this is just such a cool way to for people to be able to help themselves while also helping the planet, or at least helping the economy shift more towards this notion of sustainability. And that said, you know, there is this really cool area. I don't usually recommend it for people who are just getting started, but there is this field of impact investing, where this is more like, instead of secondary markets and things through the stock market, or the bond market, we're making direct investments into companies and organizations that we really believe in. And so there are these cool things, you know, these like equity-based crowd funds where companies can raise money. It's almost like a Kickstarter, but instead of getting like a t-shirt or something, you're actually getting shares in the company. It can be things like community bonds and nonprofits that can issue community bonds to be able to, you know, buy their own real estate and have more financial security for themselves. So there's like this whole really cool range of options now that is emerging. That stuff gets easier as you have more money, right? It often has these minimum investments. So it'll be like $1,000 minimum or like $10,000 minimum. So you don't want it to be a huge chunk of your pie chart. And, you know, so really for people that are getting started, I would tend to start on more of like the doing less evil and like the broader stuff and just kind of like get it going. And then knowing that as you have more money, as your pie chart gets bigger, you know, that's when you can really start focusing more and more on these options that will do more good. Right. And you can start to take a little bit more risk once you wrap your head around it and you understand it and you've got most of your money in something that's a little bit more sort of standard or like expected returns. And that really, you know, it is a journey that really it's about starting somewhere, knowing that it's never perfect. Something I have to like teach a lot of my clients is that really, you know, temper your expectations. That even when you look inside this vegan ETF, there's going to be stuff in there where you're like, WTF, like, why is that in this quote unquote ethical fund? And it's like, well, you know, you kind of have to dig in and understand the methodology, but you know, it's never going to be perfect. So really what you want to do is start somewhere and learn by doing. Experiential learning is just so powerful. when it comes to investing.
Okay. Well, Tim, that is awesome, man. Do you mind? So we're kind of getting to like the time limit here. Do you mind if we hop into like a fire round? I'll just ask you a few quick questions.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Awesome. So first one's going to be, what book would you suggest to anyone who's looking for a new read?
The one I just picked up, it just came up. So right now I'm reading, it's backwards on the video, but it's called The Psychology of Money. And, you know, to me, I think that this is, you know, probably one of the biggest things. There are the mechanics, the nuts and bolts of how to invest. But I actually think the biggest thing is how we think about money and this idea of sort of scarcity versus abundance and understanding that, you know, a lot of us have all this kind of emotional and psychological sort of bullshit when it comes to money. So unpacking that, I think, is one of the most powerful things.
Yeah, sure. And one kind of thing that you see a lot in the sustainability committee, at least, is to some extent minimalism, right? And kind of focusing on it changes your perception of money a little bit, I guess, in that you only really go to purchase the things you really value. And so I think definitely it can play a big role in actually like your sustainable life as well, which is super cool. So you love to see that. And then the second question is going to be, how do you define success?
So for me personally, I'm on a mission to help 1 million people invest intentionally. So, you know, really it is, I don't think it's like a money thing. I used to have this change theory about the river of money and I wanted to shift like $1 billion. That's why I went after the big institutions. And what I've realized is that it's not about money. It's about mentality. So, you know, really my mission is to help as many people as possible. So that's whether it's like one-on-one working with clients, that's been the most effective thing. Whether it's through my blog, sustainableeconomist.com, where I've got model portfolios. It is geared more towards a Canadian audience, but I'm actually about to update things more for a US audience. And, you know, I'm looking to build an online course. I want to have an e-course that's like, you know, how to build a sustainable portfolio using Robinhood, you know, something like that. That really, for me, it is about accessibility and getting this to as many people as possible. So for me, the way I define success in terms of my mission is like the number of people that are doing this, where I can like remove those barriers and get them doing it. For me in my own personal life, you know, so much of my definition of success right now is balance. That, you know, with COVID and everything, and, you know, there's a lot going on in the world right now. It's a tough time right now. So I'll be honest that I am in a bit of a survive mode rather than a thrive mode. And for me, it's just really about doing whatever I can just to stay balanced. And, you know, I know that if I look after myself, then that's going to let me help other people.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. And then another question is just going to be, what is kind of one of the biggest myths that you hear about sustainability?
About sustainability in general, the biggest thing is just the knock on the financial side of it. You know, this idea drives me nuts when people are like, how are we going to pay for it? And like all these things when, you know, really to me, capitalism is inherently unsustainable right now and has been for quite a while. And we are seeing the systemic risks emerge. And COVID is a great example where like without health, without healthy people, there is no economy. Point blank, there just isn't without healthy people. And without the environment, like climate change, without, you know, a stable environment for us to live in, there is no economy. So to me, the biggest myth about sustainability is that it's more of an expense, that it's a cost. Whereas for me, it is such an investment that by investing in people and the planet, that what we are doing is earning returns for decades and decades and hopefully generations to come, that if we continue to systematically erode those systems, that, you know, there's, you can't eat money, right? So it's just, that's, so to me, the biggest problem is the biggest myth is these economists and business people and frankly, more conservative minded people that just dismiss social environmental issues. The term we use in economics is as externalities, that they're just external to the economic system where, you know, it's just complete bullshit, that these things are absolutely fundamental to our economy. And in fact, our economy depends on a healthy population and on a healthy planet.
Absolutely. I agree with that completely. So that's awesome, Tim. And then lastly, where can people go to find you?
Yeah, so I'm going through a bit of a change in my business right now. You know, I created my blog, sustainableeconomist.com, probably in like 2012. Like I taught myself, you know, how to build a website, and, you know, in the time when blogs were a big thing. And so I'm really shifting everything over to my Good Investing brand. So over the next few weeks, I'm going to be bringing my blog over and my model portfolios, but really it is going to be goodinvesting.com. And then from there, I'm pretty active on social media. So, you know, my Twitter is at Tim Nash CFP. I'm a certified financial planner. So I've got that acronym there. And that on YouTube that, you know, I do Good Investing with Tim Nash, where, you know, I'll do reviews of ETFs to see which ones are actually legit versus, you know, which ones are maybe hiding some nasty companies in there that might be sort of more paying lip service or greenwashing when it comes to this, that, you know, that is a pretty big problem. So, you know, really YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and just, you know, I would just say bookmark goodinvesting.com that you're going to start seeing some changes there and some really good content coming out soon.
All right. Awesome. Very, very cool, Tim. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, guys, I hope you really enjoyed what Tim had to say and really took into consideration some of the points he had and how sustainable investments can actually make a really big difference in the long term of what companies do and how they act. And he talked a lot about the invisible hand and how that really makes a difference in a capitalist country. And so, guys, I hope you go out and you really think about your investments in the future. And so if you enjoyed the show today, you can find more content from us at Sustainable Life on Instagram. And that is at sustainabro.life. And we also have a Facebook group that we are now looking to grow. And that is also going to be the Sustainable Life group. So you can join that at any time. And aside from that, guys, I have nothing for you. And so I hope you have an amazing day and get out there and start doing big things. Peace.